Welcome to Crooners and Coffee Shops, everyone. My name is Heather. Today I have Celia Chavez here to chat about her experience in multiple facets of the music industry, especially with live performing and having her music involved in filmed works. Celia, to start us off, we'd love to hear a little bit about how you got started in music.
Great. Hi, Heather. And hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. Yes. Well, funny enough, given the title of this podcast, I think back, I did some of my first performances in coffee shops back in Seattle, where I'm from. But my mom put all of us kids, I have two brothers, and I think we all had to go through piano lessons. Maybe not my youngest brother, but my older brother and I definitely had the piano lessons until we were done with school. And then I went to school for music. I studied music theory and composition and voice and continued to study piano and started writing when I was a teenager. I've talked about a lot of other podcasts and other interviews, you know, that I actually had a lot of fear in my early 20s and stopped doing music and then did a job for a decade. So I had a decade break from music and then came back and just really committed to it. Moved to New York and started working there, singing however I could, taking whatever job I could, and learning a lot about the business and getting to kind of be in the shadow of a lot of really great people, artists and creators, singing in studios and singing in the small clubs in New York, and then going on to touring from there. So super nut jelly.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have the, you know, I grew up with music, playing such and such instrument, mm-hmm. doing the choirs, studying in school and such. But I mean, it's the unfortunate thing about modern society is that we have it ingrained into our almost our being that you have to work, pay taxes until you die, and you don't have any time for fun things or things that you actually enjoy. And you were lucky and had gotten the chance to fully pursue what you wanted to do. And that is a successful feat in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely wasn't easy. I mean, the whole time I was in New York, I worked a full-time job, sang in a wedding band on weekends, sang at night in the clubs. And seriously, I've averaged 4 hours of sleep a night, probably. The number of times that I woke up on my couch with the lights on, with my dinner in my lap, me just like zonked to the world and waking up just in time to get ready for work, to go to the office. There were a lot of those mornings. So it wasn't easy, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah. It's the fine line of work-life balance that all of us are trying to achieve, I feel like. So you've been kind of teasing some new music in the works, and out of respect, you don't have to play anything, but if you have any like sneak peeks in terms of what you can tell us instrumentally and thematically with the lyrics, we would love to hear it.
Okay. Well, let's see. Well, I have a couple of projects going. I have an acoustic duo with my partner, Simon Petty, called Petty Chavez. So it's his last name and my last name. And we sing in harmony. And so we have a project going now that's kind of just ongoing. I mean, we're eventually making an album, but we're releasing singles, you know, like a lot of people are right now. And that is a very minimal acoustic duo. We both play guitar and I play percussion and we sing harmony, and it's super simple. What are the songs about? Wow. It sounds really cheesy, but like love and hope and stuff like that and peace. I wish I had a better description. I need to work on that. But I mean, we want people to listen to the music. I think what we get reflected back by our audience is that it's soothing to listen to. It's relatable. We sing just kind of about our lives. We have an interesting love story. And so we share that in our songs. And just live, we released just before the pandemic, a song called Our Apartment, not knowing that we would spend the next 18 months there. And me just streaming all our live streams from our apartment, which the listeners can't see it, but you can see it behind me, Heather. And, you know, it's just really relatable and soothing to listen to. So people can check that out if they want. Petty Chavez. We're all over the digital distributors and everything and Bandcamp.
Woo, definitely excited. Yeah. Need some relaxing music in our lives for sure. So
yeah. And then my solo thing is a little bit more, gosh, well, it's funny because I have never been called an Americana artist until about 2 months ago. And then all of a sudden I'm on a panel at Americana Fest in 2 weeks and I've got a showcase. And that record that I'm working on, my solo stuff, I'm working with my friend and producer, Jeremy Little, who's in Nashville. So I'm going to go to Nashville and work on the record with him. We started this record the year that I started touring with Enrique Iglesias. So, you know, right away I was out of town a lot. And yeah, so we started that. Wow, that's 7 years ago. Now that we're done, now we're talking about it, I'm like, it's 7 years old, this project. But that's a bit more full band. There are acoustic tracks on that too, but I did a number of tracks with Butch Norton and David Sutton, who's the rhythm section from Lucinda Williams' band. So that's very exciting for me to be able to release a project with those guys on it. Some of it will be a little more rockin', I think, as contemporary Americana, which is interesting because I still don't really think of myself as an Americana artist, but I guess that's where I fall. In my case, it might be because I started coming out of jazz, which is what I sang. Like when I was gigging in Seattle, I sang jazz, what is now kind of vintage pop, you know, like 80s, 70s. Laurel Canyon songwriters and 60s and that sort of thing. And anyway, so it like for me to think of myself as an Americana artist, I'm not really sure where that came from, but I guess that's what it sounds like now. I play acoustic guitars and there we are.
Yeah. I feel like everybody's musical journey changes throughout their life. And I'm hoping for the days where genres become meaningless and everybody could just say, well, yeah, like I'm listening to music kind of thing. It's like, what do they sound like? And you could just kind of describe their sound instead of like specific genre and such. And I feel like it's starting to change, like it's the beginning stages, and I am all for it. So I believe that creatives should be able to do whatever they want in their projects. If they want to do the same thing, that's fine. If they want to do a different type of genre album with each release that they do, that's fine too.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice if people were just curious and you said, oh, I play music and they just listen to it. But people are so busy, right? We just talked about how busy we are.
Oh, gosh. So, the grind anyway. Can't. I did the 7 days a week work week, you know, years ago. And that was when I swore to myself I would never do it again. Life is too short to waste your life away on doing things that you don't want to do. So
that's true. That's true.
Yeah. So a good thing that you've been doing since pandemic, and you know, you discussed that you were doing concerts, you know, in your apartment, you know, to go along with your yes. song foreshadowed, I guess.
Yeah. We manifested a little too well there.
Extremely powerful manifestation. But you've been doing the online concerts and also posts to showcase like your live performance skills. Now you're doing the hybrid model, which is cool. I'm very interested to see how your experiences have been with that. But do you feel that the pandemic kind of created a shift within the live performance realm? And do you think those changes are positive or negative?
I think the changes are positive. I think that it's good to have another way for artists to be able to reach their audience more directly, which is what we found was happening last year. We were scheduled for a UK tour at the end of March 2020, which got canceled, as you can guess. But many of those people then were so disappointed that they couldn't see us in the UK. So when we started doing live streaming, they were hopping on. And so we started doing two live streams a weekend, one for the US evening audience. And then we do one at like noon on Saturday or something, or Sunday, so that we could get prime time overseas in the UK and in Europe. And it was pretty amazing. It was crazy how many people watched, like in the early days when everything really shut down. And I gotta say, we were really touched by how supportive people were for musicians and for us, and especially, I mean, we just put out a virtual tip jar and just didn't ask for any amount. And people were putting all kinds, you know, sending us all kinds of Venmo and PayPal. And, you know, this is coming from being musicians. You're used to people just throwing a dollar in your tip hat, you know, or something if you're at a gig. We would be so touched by people's generosity. And I think it's important to recognize that I think that there's traditionally well, not traditionally, but in the past half century, there has been this great separation between the musicians, the artists, and their on the audience. You know, there've been layers of where the money goes, you know, how the money gets to the artist. And live streaming, just you're able to open up to them and directly feel how they're receiving your music. They'll tell you because they'll put it in the chat. When they hear a new song, oh my gosh, blah, blah, blah. So you know it's working. It's definitely positive for us. And I feel like it was quite positive for the people who were far away and couldn't see us. There was a shift last year. This period now, I think when things are starting to open up, we're definitely seeing a drop in the number of people attending our live streams because we just have more competition. You know, people can go do things. They can go to a concert. Like if we're playing on a Saturday night, we're competing with someone playing at the Staples Center. Well, maybe not at the Staples Center, but, you know, at a big concert for a major artist. So we'll see, I guess, how it's going to pan out. I think it was good in general to bring a lot of artists out into the live stream arena where they could be more directly connected with their audience and their community. And the thing that we didn't realize that would happen is that people would be creating community in the live stream concert, in the chat, and talking to each other. There, we did one show where Simon, my partner, like there were a bunch of people who used to go to these gigs that he did in town at a bar years ago. The bar since closed, but there was this whole community of people who used to come and hang out and drink together and listen to music and sing along. And many of them had not seen each other in ages. And then they would see each other in the chat for our concert and they just started talking to each other. You know what I mean? And so there was that community renewal as well. So I think it's a good change. I don't know what's going to happen as things open up more or if we have another dip, if we'll see people coming back to our shows in the same numbers as they were, you know, a year ago. But it was good for us too. And I think for a lot of artists, because it forced us into digging into technology a little more. I'm talking to you now on an audio setup that I wouldn't have probably been driven to learn how to use as urgently if last year hadn't happened. And I think that's given a lot of empowerment. Also, you know, that knowledge of that technology has empowered a lot of artists as well to be able to do stuff from home that they used to have to go to a studio for.
Yeah, it's definitely good skill sets to have because kind of like what you just said right now, like certain things you felt like you could only pursue that in a theater or in a studio type setting. And now there's so much technology. And it's funny that you brought up that pandemic kind of forced us all to like learn these new tactics in terms of like doing creative works and such, because, you know, I was toying around with the idea of transferring over to the podcast realm, but I was just dragging my feet. And then pandemic hit and it's like, well, I can't meet with people in person. Obviously, it's not safe to do so. I don't want crooners and coffee shops to die out. So I guess I'm going to be a podcaster now. And here we are over a year later.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah.
It's
great. Yeah. So you've gotten the chance to act in FX's Better Things. You were a performer, you know, bringing your career to life on the screen, which is cool.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
Yeah. And you've also had your music featured in filmed works like The Young and the Restless and also the 2000 film Inheritance. And I kind of wanted to ask you like a fun little question. If you could provide the soundtrack to any type of filmed work, whether it's a TV show, a docuseries, film or such, what type of genre or storyline would you like it to be?
Well, I have two answers to that. My big crazy fantasy for a film series or whatever. I've always thought it would be so cool to sing one of the James Bond theme songs, the title theme song, because it's just so crazy. And there's always like these women like Shirley Bassey and Adele and Carly Simon, like those singers, like that would be just such a great group to be in. And they're always like big hits too. So that would be awesome. And there are always these great cinematic songs. And then I've just recently really been digging more into my ancestry as a Filipina. And I feel like there's something there, like, and I can't say I know anything about the music of the Philippines or anything, but I feel like there's something there. There's some project in my future that's about that experience or being in the diaspora, you know. I'm not sure what that is. But there's a lot of questions I have about my ancestry. So I think that would be an interesting way to explore it through musical research or something like that. This is just a little nugget in my brain. This is definitely not something I'm currently working on, but it's just something that I feel a pull towards at these days, you know?
Yeah. And it's a cool concept to, because, you know, it's easy to do the research on someone who is famous that's also a musician or certain historical aspects and such. But exploring your own heritage through music, I feel like that's such an awesome concept. And when the time comes, when this project comes to fruition, I'm definitely excited to check it out. And when you get featured in a future James Bond movie.
Yeah, I'll definitely be telling you about that.
So I wanted to go into the topic of music education, since you were on the educated side and the educator side now. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's been on a steady decline for years in schools to just get rid of creative mm-hmm. programs, and unfortunately includes music. As someone who was in the music instructing world, how important do you feel keeping these types of programs around is for building creativity within the younger generations?
That is a good question. I believe that arts education is essential for an educated society, for a modern society. And I feel like, just my opinion here, folks, but I feel like a lot of what's going on in the world, the divisiveness and the judgment, you know, I just feel like it's basically a lack of empathy. And I feel like one thing that you teach kids or anyone or adults when you're teaching something creative or teaching something around the arts, there's an inherent empathy in that. When you're encouraged to be creative, you're encouraged to kind of do two things at the same time. One is look at the world with an open heart and mind, because when we make art, we're interpreting the world around us. And that includes being open to people, you know. And you're also encouraged to go inside and see what your voice wants to say about your experience. But your experience is affected by other people's experience and your interaction with other people. One of the things I love teaching is vocal harmony. And you can't sing harmony by yourself. I mean, you can stack vocals on a recording, but like to sing harmony in the world, you have to sing it with other people. You can't ignore what they're singing, or it's not going to sound like harmony, because you have to blend with them. You have to hear what the movement is between the parts. If you're going to blend tonally, you know, you have to listen to what vowel they're singing. You know, you have to listen to the texture in the voice in the people around you, or the one other person. You know, you're having a musical conversation with them. And I feel like just that alone, just that one example, teaches empathy in a special way. In a way that isn't like pointing a finger at someone and saying, you need to learn empathy. You learn it because you learn that what you do is affected and dependent upon other people, and that you have to accept the world as it is and then make your choices based on that. These things, I mean, that's that in music, that's definitely the case. No matter what instrument, if you're going to play or improvise or anything, you have to first listen. And then second, be in acceptance of what you're hearing, because you have to deal with it. You don't have a choice. Otherwise, you're fighting against it. And maybe, you know, maybe if dissonance is your goal in that piece of music, then fine. But if you're looking for unison or harmony or synchronization, then there has to be acceptance in your moment. Same thing with any of the other arts. And I feel like it's a way to teach kids how to interact with their world with openness and acceptance and lack of judgment, but not lack of discernment. You have to have discernment as well if you're being creative and you're making art. And you have to make choices. You have to make intentional choices. And there are consequences. So all these things are things that you can teach through art without being preachy, you know?
Absolutely. And like, when you think about it, there's a reason why biopic films exist. We're interested in the history of music of the past. But it also opens up our minds to what tactics could be changed for the future. And how we can grow as creatives in a creative industry and everything. If you could give yourself any advice in regards to what you've experienced within music or within your life in general, what advice would you give yourself?
Don't be so afraid to be yourself, and also to take time to learn who that is. It's super simple with me. I spent most of my life working for other people and also trying to fit into what I thought would be the successful track for me. And it's only in the past several years that I've had people in my life saying, Celia, it's okay to be an artist. You know, you get to be the artist now. And I don't even know what that means, you know, and now today I do, and I'm still learning who that is. And I wish that I could tell 15-year-old Celia, you know, stop looking at other people to try and emulate that. I mean, I think that I should say that is probably how we learn to be musicians in the first place, is that we just start copying music that we love. But, you know, at a certain point, it's possible to recognize that you're good enough to try speaking in your own voice. And it's just taken me a long time because I've had a lot of success supporting other people's vision, and it's kept me alive and paid the bills this long. But I'm really excited that I have the time and the space now, and that music has just changed so much. The industry has just changed so much. So yeah, don't be afraid to be yourself, and also don't be afraid to sound like crap.
We're always the hardest on ourselves. We're our biggest critics, for sure. Mm-hmm. What's the
help?
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's another thing that creativity can teach, that humility of trying something new and not being afraid of doing something like a beginner.
Yeah. Life is too short, but also better late than never.
Better late than never. Absolutely.
So what do you hope that your audience will take away from your music?
Just some lightness, you know, just like we've been talking, like people are so busy. They think they have to do everything and that life is heavy. And the fact that I just described one of my projects earlier is just like, oh, it's just about love and peace. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to just have people walk away with that feeling that love is possible and peace is possible and people are okay, you know.
That's two of the things that are very much needed, especially right now.
Yeah. I mean, I just hope that it just opens people up to the beauty that's there in the world. So.
Yeah. And to kind of end off the interview portion, you already gave us a little bit of a sneak peek at what type of works you're working on, but are there any other fun, exciting things we should be expecting from you in the near future?
Well, I talked about going to Americana Fest. It'll be the first time I've been at that conference. My duo is going to be at Far West, which is Folk Alliance Regional West, and also the NRFA Northeast Regional Folk Alliance, NRFA Conference. These are virtual conferences. And all of these, if you play acoustic music, these are the gatherings that happen, you know, every year for the community. And if you like acoustic music, you can go to all of the online shows for that weekend. They have a public pass that you can buy. So you could go to those websites and just get, like, for $20, you can see tons of music, you know, if you want. Just be tune in when you want. You donate to them if you want. And then just going, I'm really excited about Americana Fest because I've never been. Like I said, it's not a world that I really saw myself sitting in, but apparently I do. So I'm just going to see what it's like and say hello to people and play some music and work on my record while I'm in Nashville.
Woo, that will be so exciting. Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be a really fun trip and you've got a lot of exciting things. Where can everybody find you online?
Oh, great question, because I always forget to say that. My website is celiachavez.com, which is CELIACHAVEZ.com. I'm on Instagram as Celia Chavez Music, but music is spelled M-U-Z-I-K. I tried to correct it yesterday or 2 days ago and it's taken. So like someone took my alias. I can't change it. And I'm on Facebook under Celia Chavez Music, spelled correctly. And Bandcamp, I think it's celiachavez.bandcamp.com. So I've got some music up there if anyone is looking to purchase. And I'm on YouTube as well. You could just search for me, my name on YouTube. But yeah, thanks for asking. I'd love to connect with some of your listeners if they want to say hi.
Yeah, everybody hit up Celia on all the platforms.
all the platforms.
Yeah. And to get into our coffee shop appreciation portion here at Kerners and Coffee Shops, we love our coffee and we cannot get nearly enough of it in our lives. So normally I stray away from mentioning the lovely Starbucks, but it is fall season and your girl is not a pumpkin spice girl. Mm. I hate pumpkin. Mm-mm. But my favorite thing about fall drinks is when they include maple or apple. So Starbucks actually has a new apple crisp macchiato for this fall season, and highly recommend. It's definitely tastes the apple. It's not nearly as sweet as like you would expect it to be from Starbucks. So this is one of the few times that I will be shouting at Starbucks, everyone. Apple crisp macchiato. Yeah. Do you have any local coffee shops or cafes that you'd like to shout out?
I do. Yeah. One of the exciting things that's happening is that Simon and I and our producer, Greg Johnson, who's a great musician and artist in his own right, we just got a studio space in Santa Monica here in California on the west side of LA. And right by our studio is this lovely coffee shop. I don't really want to tell people about it because I want to still be able to go and sit in quiet, but not my coffee. But it's called Bluey's, B-L-U-E-Y apostrophe S. It's lovely.
And is the people it newer? Are
really nice. I think it's been there for a little while. It used to be in Australia. I guess Australians used to, it used to be the Bondi Cafe. But now it's Bluey's.
Okay. I remember Bondi Cafe.
Yeah. They might have more than one. I think there might be more than one Bondi. But this is new, I guess, new ownership. I don't know how new. I'm just new in the neighborhood and I'm new in the studio complex. But that was one of the key linchpins for like if we took this studio space, it's like, is it close to coffee? Is it close to a cafe?
So we could like have meetings there. For everything.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But now we have, we can say meet us at Bluey's if we're going to meet a client or something. And they'll be like, oh, what a nice coffee shop. Yes, I want to do business with you. So anyway.
Love it. You guys are going to be best friends with them. Well, Celia, it was awesome having you on here. Pleasure to chat with you.
So fun.
Yeah.
Me too.
I hope that all of your future endeavors are going to go well. I hope that you're staying safe and staying healthy.
You too.
Yeah.
And everybody out there.
Yes, yes. And to our listeners, stay safe out there, everyone, and stay caffeinated.